So to introduce our first speaker, someone I know well, it's Dr. Tracy Hedrick, and she's going to be talking about defining surgical site infection, why should we care? Dr. Hedrick is Associate Professor of Surgery and Vice Chair of Clinical Affairs at the University of Virginia. Welcome.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be speaking with you today as my slides are coming up, hopefully. This is a topic that I have really been interested in for nearly a decade now, and one that I hold very dear and near to my heart. Sorry about that. Thank you. All right, I do not have any financial disclosures. And the only thing I will say is my talk's going to be light on facts and heavy on opinion. So those opinions are mine and mine alone. It's really a privilege for me to be speaking with you today. So as we've heard, SSI is the most common hospital-acquired infection in the surgical population, and it contributes millions of dollars annually to healthcare spending and really contributes substantially to poor outcomes. And given the increased rates of SSI specifically to colorectal surgery and the frequency with which colorectal surgery is performed at every hospital in this nation, despite size and location, SSI following colorectal surgery has really become a standard marker of quality for which to compare institutions. Now, the national rate of SSI following colorectal surgery is somewhere around 8 to 9%, according to NISQIP, which utilizes the CDC definition for the diagnosis. However, the incidence is almost uniformly greater than when you're using a prospective collection methods and varies very widely throughout the literature from 5 to 40%. And this discrepancy really has significant implications from a clinical research and quality control standpoint. So obviously the CDC definition is the most accepted. It's referenced here on the right. It's important to note, however, that one of the key criteria here is diagnosis by the attending physician. So this leaves the attending physician as the final arbiter. And we performed an observational study where we actually looked at how often attending surgeons agreed with one another about whether or not there was a wound infection and compared it to NISQIP. And as you can see, we couldn't agree. We found very wide discrepancy. And several other investigators have found similar findings. Now, it's obvious to everyone, particularly here, that NISQIP is the most reliable surgical outcomes database. Multiple reports demonstrate greater than 95% to 98% inter-rater agreement between auditors and the clinical reviewers. However, this is based on what is actually documented in the EMR. And unlike UTI or DVT, for instance, where you can query that data directly from the EMR, SSI is 100% based on what is accurately documented. And so this diagnosis is particularly vulnerable to omissions in documentation. And so I'm going to highlight that from one of our studies where we took photographs of the wound and then again compared the reliability of diagnosis. So for this particular patient on postoperative day number 5, the progress note said that the patient had cellulitis versus a wound infection. The next day, the note says, staples were removed, no purulent drainage, erythema had improved. And from then on out, all the note said was that the wound was open and packed. Yet this is the wound on the day that the patient was discharged. And I don't think that the open and packed adequately portrayed this wound. And I don't think we at UVA are particularly different than any of the rest of you in our poor documentation habits. Yet this is all that the abstractors have to go on. Another key issue that I think contributes to the confusion is the fact that we can't say wound infection anymore. At some point, it's become taboo. And I would argue, though, that the majority of people, when they hear surgical site infection, they think of a wound, something they can see with their own eyes. Yet the actual definition includes organ space infections, which is particularly relevant in colorectal surgery because this is anastomotic leak. And this has significant implications. The risk factors are different. The initiatives are different. And it really contributes a lot to the confusion using this umbrella term. So what are the clinical implications for misdiagnosing a wound? Well, we performed a study. It looked at how often our patients after discharge sought care out of concern of their wound. And what we found is that 15% of our patients were actually placed on antibiotics by someone other than ourselves, when in fact very few of them had a wound infection. So this misdiagnosis can lead to overtreatment, which can lead to antimicrobial resistance as well as C. diff. It also leads to patient dissatisfaction if they're told by their primary care physician, who they trust, that they don't have a wound, that they do have a wound infection, and then you try to tell them that they don't. There are also significant research implications, specifically with regard to the limitations inherent to using a large national database. So let's take, for example, the skip measures, which were implemented by CMS in early 2000s. These measures included on-time delivery of appropriate prophylactic antibiotics, proper hair removal, maintenance of normothermia. These were based on grade 1A recommendations by the CDC based on a ton of high-level quality studies. At UVA, we implemented the skip measures and we were able to publish a significant reduction in our wound infection. However, when you look, there are multiple national database studies, this is one of them, that failed to demonstrate any correlation between compliance with skip measures and the development of an SSI. Now, there are undoubtedly multiple reasons to explain incongruence between prospective randomized trial and real-world experience, but I think in this case you cannot discount the possibility that the fact that we cannot reliably define SSI between institutions had something to do with this. This discrepancy also has several limitations with regard to quality. So this is a study by Dr. Wick and her colleagues looking at the discrepancy between SSI rates using NISQIP, which you can see here on the left, and NHSN. So on the left, the hospitals are ranked according to their SSI rates by NISQIP. On the right, by NHSN. Just look at the difference. So Hospital M here, one of the worst performers in NISQIP, yet the very best in NHSN. And it makes you realize just how arbitrary, potentially, these ranking systems can be. Now let's talk a bit about the definition, which really has remained unchanged since 1992. And you might be thinking, well, that's not that long ago. You know, I was in high school. But then you actually start thinking of what was happening in 1992. This is the first year that Motorola introduced a digital phone, serving as the predecessor to the flip phone. Email was in its infancy. This is the type of computer we were using. There was no electronic medical record. Everything was written. Now virtually everyone has access to a high-definition camera and the ability to communicate in real time immediately with their physician. And I think it really remains a significant oversight not to include this in the definition. So the question, obviously, is can photography aid in the diagnosis of SSI? And Heather Evans performed this study looking at that very question. They use web-based simulation to survey providers, asking them to diagnose SI based on descriptions of the wound, and then they provided them with the photographs. The addition of the photographs, as you would expect, improved specificity and accuracy, and most importantly, it reduced overtreatment. It reduced the times they told the patients to go to the emergency room or prescribed antibiotics. Therefore, these data and common sense would suggest that absolutely photography can aid in the diagnosis of SSI. However, there are limitations. So I described our observational study previously. We did a follow-up prospective study to that where we photographed everybody's wounds. And then we again queried the attending surgeons to see if we could agree on whether or not the patient had an SSI based on looking at the same photography. And what we found that even in the presence of the photographs, there was still wide variability in our ability to accurately define an SSI when we were using CDC criteria. Now, when we were given an objective checklist, in our study we used the ASEPSIS score, that inter-rater variability improves substantially. Now, this is the asepsis score, so when we use in our study, there are others, but this is probably the most widely described. The problem is very cumbersome, most of them are, and few incorporate wound photography. This was a study done developing an objective measure for SSI. It was done very well. They queried providers. They queried patients. They developed this very nice questionnaire, which is written in the patient's voice. Again, very cumbersome. And are we actually going to take time to do this in our busy practices? A follow-up study in vascular surgery patients evaluating the use of wound photography and specific wound characteristics. They found that the inter-rater variability was high when you looked at the specific wound characteristics. However, most people agreed on what treatment they would recommend looking at the same photography. So this is certainly not an exhaustive list of what has been done, but it highlights the fact there are a lot of people out there working on this. And I think there's great potential for incorporating wound photography into the SSI diagnosis. So in the last couple minutes, I'd just like to highlight a project I've been fortunate enough, along with Dr. Wigg, to be involved in that focuses on some of these key concepts I've mentioned today. The ASSIST program is led by Dr. Heather Evans, who's now at MUSC, and Bill Lober of UW, and is funded by the SHEPHERD program through the CDC. The objective of this program is to assess how stakeholders approach design, assessment, and adoption of technology in the management and diagnosis SSI, with the goal of really providing feedback and recommendations to the CDC. So the project started with a big literature search, and the investigators then conducted several semi-structured interviews with various stakeholders in mHealth and patient-generated health data. Back in April, we had an advisory group workshop where I was fortunate enough to be a part of. And again, we provided guidance and recommendation with the next step of providing a health technology assessment to the CDC that hopefully will be published. And I think this is going to be key in perhaps trying to bring some innovation into the diagnosis. Therefore, in summary, I think it's time to consider the need for a new SSI definition that will bring us into the 21st century. In my opinion, this diagnosis should separate a wound infection from an organ infection. They're incredibly different. The implications are different. They should be treating different. I think we should consider incorporation of wound images and patient-generated health data with a simple objective scoring system. It's been my pleasure speaking to you, and I look forward to the discussion. Thank you.